Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th Canto, Chapter 24, chanting the song sung by Lord Shiva, Text 43. Shaktitraya Samitaya
Shaktitraya Samitaya
Midhushe Hankritatmane
Midhushe Hankritatmane
Chetarakuti Rupaya
Chetarakuti Rupaya
Namo Vacho Vibhutaye
Namo Vacho Vibhutaye
Shaktitraya
Shaktitraya
Three kinds of energies
Sametaya
Unto the reservoir
Midhushe
Unto Rudra
Ahankrita Atmane
The source of egotism
Cheta,
knowledge.
Akuti,
eagerness to work.
Rupaya,
unto the form of.
Nama,
my obeisances.
Vacha,
unto the sound.
Vibhutaye,
unto the different types of opulences. Translation responsively.
My dear Lord,
you are the supreme controller of the worker.
You are the supreme controller of the worker.
The sense activities and results of sense activities.
Therefore, you are the controller of the body, mind, and senses.
You are also the supreme controller.
You are also the supreme
of egotism known as Rudra.
You are the source of knowledge
and the activities of the Veda conjunctions. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada.
Jaya.
Everyone acts under the dictation of the ego. Therefore, Lord Shiva is trying to purify false egotism through the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Since Lord Shiva, or Rudra, is himself the controller of egotism, he indirectly wants to be purified by the mercy of the Lord so that his real egotism can be awakened. Of course, Lord Rudra is always spiritually awake, but for our benefit, he's praying in this way. For the impersonalist, pure egotism is aham brahmasmi. I am not this body, I am spirit soul. But in its actual position, the spirit soul has devotional activities to perform. Therefore, Lord Shiva prays to be engaged both in mind and in action in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord according to the direction of the Vedas. This is the process for purifying false egotism. Cheta means knowledge. Without perfect knowledge, one cannot act perfectly. The real source of knowledge is the vacha, or sound vibration, given by Vedic instructions. Here, the word vacha, or vibration, means the Vedic vibration. The origin of creation is sound vibration. And if the sound vibration is clear and purified, perfect knowledge and perfect activities actually become manifest. This is enacted by the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Shiva is praying, or thus Lord Shiva is praying again and again for the purification of body and mind and activities through the purification of knowledge and action under the pure directions of the Vedas. Lord Shiva prays to the Supreme Personality of Godhead so that his mind, his senses, and his words will all turn towards devotional activities only. Shaktitraya Sametaya Midhushe Hankritatmane Chetarakuti Rupaya Namo Vacho Viputaye. God, I'm just at the stage of being in between long and short sighted, so everything's completely blurry. Okay. Translation again. My dear Lord, you are the supreme controller of the worker, sense activities, and results of sense activities, karma. Therefore, you are the controller of the body, mind, and senses. You are also the supreme controller of egotism, known as Rudra. You are the source of knowledge and the activities of Veda conjunctions. Om Jnana Tamarandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Anmalitam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. I was born in the darkest of ignorance, but my spiritual master is kindly forcing my eyes open with the torchlight of Vedic knowledge. Vansha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So the root cause of all of our problems in this material world is the false ego, the hankara, or false identification with matter, in particular the subtle matter of the subtle body and the gross matter of the gross body. And this identification, it drives the living entity. It talks in the verse about akuti, or this eagerness to act. So identification with the material mind and senses, it drives the living entity to act for sense gratification. We are impelled towards the objects of the senses. And thus, in this way, one falls under the influence of the three modes of material nature. It's said in Bhagavad Gita 3.27, Prakriti kriyamanani gunai kamani savasha ahankara vimudhatma kartahami timanyate, that the living entity, bewildered by the influence of false ego, this ahankara, he thinks himself the doer of activities that are actually carried out by the modes of nature. And the jiva, therefore, because of the nature of sense gratification being very chanchalam or flickering, it's just there for an instant and then it's gone. Then he's always being whipped by hankering and lamenting. And that way he's always afflicted, always suffering. And Jai Shishi Radha Gopina. So the more that one's false ego is invested in matter, the bigger it expands, the more we're afflicted. Normally, there's parts of the body that our consciousness doesn't touch, like, for example, the fingernails and the hair. So these are dead parts of the body. We don't feel when things happen to the hair and the fingernails, so normally when we cut them, we don't feel any anxiety. But sometimes people's false egos are so big in Kali Yuga that it extends all the way into the hair. And it's actually one of the predictions for Kali Yuga, that people will think themselves very important based on their hairstyle. And so normally if we're cutting, no one's in anxiety until it gets quite close to the skin, and then we get a bit restless in case someone makes a slip of the scissors. But I was remembering when I was a teenager, like a young teenager, I think maybe like 12 and 13, you're really super concerned about what people think of the body. You know, your false ego is really tied up with the bodily appearance. And every time I would go to the hairdresser, whether they were going to give a perm or a rinse or a trim, I'd come out crying like anything. I'd be completely disturbed, you know, because just, you know, a little curl here or the wrong length, and for a week you had to wear a hat and life was finished, you know, it was impossible. So most living entities, apart from devotees who are very sensible and they tie their hair back or they shave their hair off to forget about the problem, most living entities are very much affected by these modes of material nature due to false ego. And Lord Shiva also admits that he's affected by ahankara. So Srila Prabhupada notes that that Lord Shiva is actually in a transcendental position, but due to his service of supervising the mode of ignorance, sometimes he becomes affected by that temporarily. And earlier in the fourth canto, there's a nice demonstration of this. It's not so nice for Lord Shiva or for some other people involved, but the Daksha Jagya takes place, and this is a grand sacrifice performed by Daksha, the head of the Prajapatis. And when he arrives at the Jagya, he's brilliant like the sun. And his false ego has expanded when everyone offers obeisances to him. Apart from Lord Shiva, who's in Samadhi. And Shiva explains later to his wife Sati that the purpose of offering obeisances is actually to respect the super soul.
And he was already thinking of the supersoul. That's why he didn't offer obeisances to Daksha. But Daksha was in the bodily concept. He thought offering obeisances means to my body, my personality, and therefore he was offended with Shiva. So he began to speak so many bad words about Shiva, actually criticizing him, saying that he's uncivilized, he doesn't know Vedic etiquette, he's a disgrace to the demigods, he associates with filthy people, he lives in crematoriums, and he went on and on and on. And the interesting thing was that he began it all by saying that one may think I'm in a critical mentality, but actually it's not true. I'm just saying this to preserve dharma. And so this often begins a lot of criticism, such a phrase that, you know, we're actually doing this for the good of everybody. And then we spout forth all of our poison. So when Lord Shiva heard these things, he actually became very pained at heart. He began to lament. He tolerated everything like a Vaishnava, and he left. But Srila Prabhupada said this lamentation is due to a touch of the mode of ignorance. And later, when his wife Sati, the daughter of Daksha, went to the next yajna, hoping for some social interactions and actually secretly hoping she could rectify her father's mentality, Daksha, of course, he had made it quite clear that if Sati and Shiva turn up, that they're persona non grata. It means that they're not nothing, they're nobody. You don't look at them, you don't talk to them. And the woman, it said they were very soft-hearted, they couldn't control themselves. And when Sati came, they ran to embrace her and made her feel very welcome. But the men were more nervous, and the Brahmins and the priests, the uncles, the cousin brothers, they were very reserved and they wouldn't even look her in the eye. So although she's a Vaishnavi, she's Goddess Durga, and she's the wife of a great Vaishnavi, it's said that she became very pained by that also and became angry. And so she admits that she is also under the influence of the modes of nature. And Srila Prabhupada states in that purport about Sati that actually nobody, even the greatest of the devas, Brahma, Shiva, Durga, nobody transcends the modes of material nature apart from a pure devotee. And the kamis are kamis, the fruitive workers, non-devotees, they're very aware that actually they're being afflicted by miseries and that there's no satisfaction. As Mick Jagger says, he, I can't get no satisfaction. But the problem is that like an ass, I try and I try and I try and I try. So they don't know what to do about it and they keep trying because they don't have an alternative, they don't have knowledge. But human life begins when one begins to question that I'm not satisfied, but rather than just carrying on trying, I should try to make a solution to my problems. I feel like a fish out of water. There's something about this material world that doesn't satisfy me. So therefore, Vedanta Sutra, which is the Chaita, or transcendental knowledge mentioned in the verse, it begins Atato Brahma Jigyasa, that now we've actually gained some intelligence. We've come to the human form of life. Now let us inquire and try to find a solution to problems, our problems. It begins, transcendental knowledge, with Aham Brahmasmi, Srila Prabhupada says. But that's not the end of transcendental knowledge. It's only the beginning. Like when we're having a nightmare, we may be in so much illusion and great anxiety. Everybody's had nightmares about being chased by murderers. And I was talking with Helena one of the other day, one of my recurring nightmares, I have a few. One is being in a tidal wave, but another one is just being in a public place with no clothes on. And, you know, that terrible anxiety, you're convinced in your dream it's real and you're running to hide, you're trying to pull clothes off a clothesline, find something, and it's all about having your inner self revealed. No one wants that, you know. So when we wake up in a cold sweat, we're relieved that this situation is not real. But that's not really waking up. What waking up really means is to actually remember who you are and what your duties are and to get out of bed. And yeah, I'm actually living here in Radha Desh. I'm a servant of Srila Prabhupada. It's quarter to four in the morning, I've got to get out of bed, take a bath, and start performing devotional service. That's waking up. Just to lie in bed and feel relieved, that's like a neutral platform. So ahambrahasmi, it's just the cessation of nonsense activity. And that, you can get that far actually just by logic, by using your intelligence. In the Bhakti Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami gives a series of arguments, very nice arguments, leading a person who's even a non-devotee or an atheist up to the point of understanding that they're a spirit soul and that there's a Supreme Personality of Godhead. But beyond that, to know what Brahmasmi actually is, what's the nature of the soul, that goes beyond logic. But nevertheless, we need to find that out, because the soul is by nature anandamoya pyasat. It's always looking for pleasure, because the soul has a spiritual mind and spiritual senses that are hankering after spiritual sense objects. And unless that aspect of our personality is fulfilled, then we won't be satisfied. Liberation will be incomplete. So to understand those things that are above logic, then we need the mercy of a Vaishnava like Lord Shiva, who's here acting as the spiritual master of the Prachetas. So Lord Shiva has many names that reflect this concern to impart Vedic knowledge and the capacity of a spiritual master. He's called Pashupati, which means that he's the protector of even animalistic men. He's Bhutanath, he's the lord of very fallen creatures, but he's always trying to elevate them like a father. He's also known here in the verse, it says Midhu. So Midhu, it means a benediction. And Shiva is known as Midhu Stama. He's the best giver of benedictions. Sometimes it happens, because Shiva is Ashutosh, he's easily pleased, then he'll give a benediction that appears to be unbeneficial. And we see that in the instance of Vrikasura. A demon approached Shiva for a benediction. He performed very ghastly austerities, and he got a benediction that whoever's head he touched would immediately explode into millions of pieces. So this benediction was given by Shiva, but it turned out to be a bad benediction, if you like, more like a, especially for Shiva, because Vrikasura, he then began to say, Lord Shiva, you have a very beautiful wife, Parvati, and if you weren't there, then I could enjoy her. So I think I want to touch your head the first. So this benediction, it just implicated Vrikasura in more offences. Eventually he became punished by Vishnu. Vishnu tricked him into touching his own head, and his own head exploded. But Lord Shiva's real purpose, or his real desire, is actually to seek out people who will accept the topmost benediction. There's one story, at least I know, of Lord Shiva giving this topmost benediction, and that's a devotee who approached him for opulence. He was a poor Brahmin, and he said, I need material facility. But Shiva could see something in him, some pinch of sincerity. In Chaitanya Bhagavat, they always talk about a sesame seed's worth. So a little sincerity was there. And he said, okay, for the topmost opulence, you go to see Sanatan Goswami. He's meditating in a cave in Vrindavan. He has a lot of treasure in that cave, a lot of treasure. So then the Brahmin became excited, and he took direction of how to find Sanatan Goswami. And this is the story of when Sanatan Goswami met the Brahmin. And he said, oh, you're searching after opulence? You want my touchstone that turns everything to gold? You can take it. It's outside over the wall. And in India, they have a area outside over the wall where they always put the leaf plates and all of the trash. He says, I'm keeping it out there. So the Brahmin, first of all, took the Chintamani. And he was thinking, oh, this is something very valuable, but he's keeping it in the trash. So after some time, he found out what was the topmost benediction. And he was convinced to throw away the touchstone and accept the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra as the real treasure of human life. So Shiva, in that case, he gave the topmost benediction of association with devotees. because devotees are able to engage a person's mind and senses in an activity that will be completely purifying and will give them real happiness. So in that way, a devotee, there, he's like a physician, expert physician. He can cure the disease of material life at its root. So some doctors, they're called quacks. They can only treat symptoms. They can't really treat the underlying cause. But a real physician, he'll treat the acute symptoms and the chronic problem that lies underneath at the same time. So the devotee is like that. He's in the nectar of instruction, it says that jiva vegam is the root of material desire, this uncontrolled tongue, hankering to taste nonsense and hankering to talk nonsense. But if you can control the tongue, it says, because the senses are all in a line, then you'll be able to control the other senses and you can become a Goswami. So Goswami, for Rupa Goswami, who wrote the Nectar of Instruction, it doesn't just mean a person who can restrain and restrict and control the senses in that way, but a person who can actively engage the senses in ecstatic devotional service. So the devotee, he engages the tongue in chanting Hare Krishna, that's the medicine, and he also prescribes a diet, which is taking Krishna prasadam. And Bhagavad Gita 3:31, I think it is, I don't know the Sanskrit, it says that a devotee, by taking food which is offered in sacrifice, he becomes free from sin. And being free from sin, then he's out of the entanglement of the modes of nature and his suffering ends. So it's said that this chanting, chanting of course is a sound vibration, it's vachaha, one of the sounds, transcendental sounds, that's mentioned in the verse here. So just as sound vibration is the beginning of material creation, and sound vibration begins the illusion, so sound vibration in the form of chanting, it will actually dissolve the illusion and reveal reality. So this is the meaning of mantra. It will actually deliver the mind from ignorance. And then the real truth of this material world will be revealed, and we'll begin to see the spiritual world that's beyond the material world. So Shiva, he's praying for this mercy to actually be able to see beyond the modes of material nature and see Krishna. In the Ishopanishad, it's the speaker, he's anonymous, but he's saying, my dear Lord, your mukham, your face, it's covered by haran mayena, a kind of an effulgence that clouds everything. And please let that be removed so I can see you. So the process of seeing the Lord is the process of purification. And in this age, for every age, actually, purification comes about through jagya or sacrifice. That's the way to become free from the implication of sin. Prakriti kriyamanani gunai kamani savasha. I'm doing the wrong verse here. I'm supposed to be saying 3:9. Yagna tat kamanonyantra loko yam karma bandaya. Taratam karma kuntaya mukta sangha samachara. That work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed. And if one performs a sacrifice, one becomes free from sin, actually. And Krishna, he's known as Jagya. He's the Lord of sacrifice. He comes to accept our sacrifices. Bhaktaram Jagya Tapasam. He's the Lord of all austerities and penances. Jagya, it's something that relieves material debts and it neutralizes sin. But at the same time, a more important element of jagya is that it purifies the consciousness. In this age, the jagya or the yuga dharma is the sankirtan jagya. Srila Prabhupada mentions it again and again, especially in this fourth canto, and especially when he was talking about the daksha jagya. He's always reminding us that chanting Hare Krishna is the sacrifice for this age. But we may wonder if for a sacrifice, generally you have to be a little pure at least to begin the sacrifice. Otherwise, Lord Vishnu won't accept it. So we may wonder in our chanting of Hare Krishna that if we're in a contaminated state, how that will actually be pleasing to Lord Vishnu, and how we'll get the result of the sacrifice, which is the darshan, or the presence of Lord Vishnu in our heart and mind. So in the story of the Daksha Yagya, after Daksha has been beheaded by the demon created by Lord Shiva, and then has his head replaced with a goat's head, and he regains his consciousness, you can imagine that he's feeling a little humble, appearing before all of the great sages and demigods. Before, they were all bowing down before him because he was so effulgent and so prestigious. So now he has the head of a goat, and the beard of the goat has been chopped off because the beard has been given to another sage who had his beard chopped off by another demon. So he's standing there as a beardless goat, looking like a nanny goat. And he feels a little humble and a little respectful towards Lord Shiva at that point. So Daksha is saying that, my dear Lord, your mercy is inconceivable. I was completely offensive to you. I was saying so many bad things. But you've acted actually in a very merciful way and tried to correct me. And I think this is because even though I was contaminated, I was trying to perform my duty as a brahmana by performing sacrifice. And I was, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gopina, I was doing it under the instruction of the brahmanas. So even though I was a nonsense, I was actually working with a good intention in one way. So as we become humble, actually Lord Daksha, he had seen Shiva many times before, and he'd only felt envy in his heart. But when he was a little humble, that time when he saw Shiva, Lord Shiva being a great Vaishnava, that influence was able to completely purify Daksha of his envy. So our chanting, if we just have a speck of humility or a sesame seeds worth of devotion, that will allow the presence of the holy name to completely purify the heart. So that's something encouraging. So as chanting Hare Krishna is the Yuga Dharma, Lord Chaitanya, he's the Yuga Avatar. So Lord Vishnu, he appeared in the Daksha Yagya to personally accept the sacrifice. So Srila Prabhupada says that for chanting of Hare Krishna, Lord Chaitanya, he personally appears and accepts that chanting as the Yuga Avatar. So for chanting to have full darshan of the Lord, which is the result of a yagya, that means that we see the name of Krishna as being completely non-different from Krishna. I don't know the Sanskrit very nicely of that verse from Padma Purana, but it's Namo Chintamani Krishnas. Nama Nami No. That means that Krishna and his name are completely non-different. So this gift, or this vision of seeing the Lord as completely non-different from his name, that's the actual vibhuti, or the actual opulence that we want. It's the greatest opulence. It says in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that one quality of bhakti or devotion is that it makes everything else reduced. Everything else seems insignificant in comparison. Because by bhakti, one's vision expands and becomes very great. So we see Krishna in the name, in his holy name. We see Krishna in the world around us. We see a devotee who's looking in this way. He sees Krishna as non-different from the deity. He sees Krishna in the spiritual master and the other devotees, in his service, in the shastra. And in that way, everywhere he looks, everything he sees Krishna. And such a vision is actually contagious. Just as when a person has mundane vision and they share it with others, that becomes contagious. Like I have to admit, actually, that I heard some devotees, maybe they're not very affected by it, but I'm critical. And when they say something critical, it really affects me a lot, you know. So some devotees were saying, oh, this devotee, you know, I don't like their kirtan, I don't like the way they play the instrument, and I don't like the way they look when they do it. And before, I'd never thought about it, you know, I just thought, oh, well, it's, you know, I'm not much of a musician. But some devotees who are musicians, they have a really particular, you know, analysis of kirtan. And then after hearing it, now every time I go to the kirtan and certain devotees are playing or singing, I start to think in the same way, even though I'm not a musician and I couldn't do as well myself. So mundane vision, it's contagious. But also spiritual vision, if we associate with people who see things in a transcendental way, then that's also contagious. Before we enter the deity room, we say, if we can say it properly because it's a hard mantra, but it's Om Tad Vishnu Paramam Padam Sada Pashyanti Devibhya Chakshuratatam Tad Vipasyo Vipraso Vipanyavo Jagrivamsa Samintate Vishnu Yat Paramam Padam. So just as an ordinary person, he can see the sun's rays in the sky. So the wise and learned and spiritually awake brahmanas, they can see the abode of Lord Vishnu everywhere. And because they have that vision, then they can share it with others. So this is the benefit of associating with devotees, and this is what Lord Shiva is trying to express here. He's trying to... he's saying that that Vishnu is everything. Actually, he's the supreme controller. When we act with our senses and our mind and intelligence, actually it's only Krishna that's allowing us to do that. He's the supreme controller of false ego also. He's the source of all knowledge, and he's the all of the activities of Veda conjunctions. So Shiva's trying to give this spiritual instruction. Krishna may be at Hoksaja. That's one of his names. It means he's beyond material sense perception. And normally, for an ordinary person, Krishna is avyapta. He's not manifest. You can't see him actually anywhere. And even demigods are praying that we can't understand you. But by the mercy of the pure devotee, the avyapta becomes vyapta. And one can see Krishna. And I just found a nice section of a purport, we're going to finish soon, where Srila Prabhupada is talking about this mercy of the pure devotee being able to make manifest for others the presence of Krishna. And it's also Krishna's mercy that he agrees actually to give his darshan. So it's from the same fourth canto in the section about the Daksha Jagya. And it said there that as soon as King Daksha offered the clarified butter with the mantras of the Yajurveda and a very sanctified meditation, then Lord Vishnu appeared there in his original form as Narayan. So Srila Prabhupada comments first that Lord Vishnu is all-pervading. Any devotee who in sanctified meditation follows the regulative principles and chants the required mantras and service and in a devotional mood, he can see Lord Vishnu. So I was thinking that's very relevant for our chanting every day. It's 4.7.18. I'll just read that sentence again. Lord Vishnu is all-pervading, but we don't see Lord Vishnu. Any devotee, however, who in sanctified meditation, following the regulative principles, chants the required mantras and service, and in a devotional mood, he can see Lord Vishnu. And then the last two sentences of the purport were very very personal, actually. It seemed really like Prabhupada's personal realization. And the last sentence is, in fact, very, I found it quite moving. Prabhupada writes that, it's said in the Brahma Samhita that a devotee whose eyes are anointed with the ointment of love of Godhead, he can see the Supreme Personality of Godhead always within his heart. And then Prabhupada writes, Lord Shyamasundara is so kind to his devotee. It's a purport really about the manifestation of Krishna, and just at the end somehow he writes this. Seems like his personal wonderment actually. Lord Shyamasundara is so kind to his devotee that he manifests himself in the heart of the devotee, and in that way he's always in the devotee's vision. So I'll finish there. The main point of the class, I guess, is that although the ego at the moment, it's invested in the material mind and senses, and therefore we've become fallen into ignorance and become afflicted. Lord Shiva and people like Lord Shiva, the Vaishnavas, they act as spiritual masters for society because they engage the conditioned soul using their mind and senses in devotional service. And by doing that, acting with sincerity, especially in this age, the services, principal services to chant Hare Krishna, then Lord Vishnu will actually purify the heart of that false ego and give his darshan. And this consciousness of seeing Krishna everywhere is the greatest benediction that can be bestowed by devotees like Lord Shiva. So I'll read the verse again. Shakti traya sametaya midhuse hankritatmane chaitarakuti rupaya nama vacho viputaye. My dear Lord, you're the supreme controller of the worker, the sense activities, and the results of sense activities, karma. Therefore, you're the controller of the body, the mind, and the senses. You're also the supreme controller of egotism, known as Rudra. You are the source of knowledge and the activities of the Vedic injunctions. So maybe somebody has some point to add, or
thank you for your class. It's very nice. I was thinking at the beginning of the class, wow, it's so obvious, there's the hankara and there's the mind and intelligence and so like when Krishna consciousness is explained, it just makes so much sense. You know, you have all the different things throughout the universe group. And it always surprises me why so many people are not either not interested or don't believe it. Because when I first became a devotee, I came home and I said, hey, you know, I just found out you're eating, it's brilliant. And my parents were like, you know, they're just not, they weren't even like, oh, really? That's really cool. You know, they'd have nothing, you know. And why is it that one person, when they hear Christian consciousness, will say, they go, oh my God, that's fantastic.
And Eureka!
And somebody else hears it, and they're just like, It doesn't touch them in any way, or they're not curious, or why is it?
I don't know why. Well, actually, as devotees get more and more taste, it's really difficult for them to understand why other people don't also feel as enthusiastic as they do. And I guess. The situation is that the living entity is a steel-framed heart that can't be touched by devotional service, and even his intelligence has become so dull and so covered over that practically he's completely controlled by the modes of material nature. He doesn't even think of finding a solution to his problem. In fact, he's happy there. It happens gradually by a very scientific process that the soul becomes so nicely covered over. It's said that normally when you're sinful, when you commit sins, your karma is that you're going to have to accept a lower birth, like an animal birth. But we couldn't immediately take an animal birth because we wouldn't be able to tolerate it. You know, we're human beings. And that's such a platform of ignorance. So first you're taken by the Yamadutas and you're carefully, scientifically conditioned into actually enjoying ignorance. You know, like Prabhupada says, that animal life means eating any kind of nonsense. You know, so as a human being, we wouldn't be able to tolerate it, you know. But because that's our karma, we're going to have to get used to it. So by continual process of punishment and then degradation of consciousness, which is all driven by sin, actually, it's a punishment for sin, then we become covered over and we don't care that we're suffering, we like our suffering. And even if we want to find a solution to the suffering, we think it can only be the same, in the same mode as the way we're doing now. We don't want to try anything different. And it's, I mean, we may wonder why their intelligence doesn't work properly, but it's not allowed to work properly because of sin, actually, sinful reaction.
So then maybe I should be thinking that it's amazing that someone does take.
Yeah, and that, because actually everybody's completely sinful in this world. Even just taking a step or breathing air, we're implicated so much in sin, but it's due to somehow unknown piety, this agyata sukriti, you know, that we've somehow received some pious benefit. We may have begun to do something pious unknowingly in the past, or a pure devotee, he may, in a tricky way, engage others in agyata sukriti, and then they get a little bit of piety, and then they're able to gradually things start making connections and see things. But otherwise, we're nitya buddhas, we're eternally conditioned in the material world. But those who are a little more pious, you can see they're able to understand a bit more. Like, there's quite a high percentage of people who become devotees, they're already vegetarian. It's quite interesting. Like, percentage of vegetarian, I think, in England, it's 7%. But if you were to look at the percentage of people who become devotees and join, you'd find that the percentage of vegetarians is much higher. I mean, anyone can become a devotee. In New Zealand, we had a friend who was a butcher. He became a devotee. But that's really due to extreme mercy, you know. But generally, people who are a little pious, they can start to understand something a little bit more, you know. So, yeah, like Daksha, for example, he was seeing Shiva many times, and Shiva was a pure devotee. Everybody else could see it. But when he saw Shiva, he just saw the filth, and he saw the, you know, the unpleasant clothes, the body smeared with ash, and the garlands of skulls and everything. Every other demigod, they're hankering to get this maha prasadam from Shiva, you know, his maha garland. They don't mind that it's made of skulls because it's so auspicious, it's been on Shiva's body. But when Daksha sees that, he sees something else. But when Shiva had actually bestowed his mercy on him by punishing him, and he was relieved of some of that sinful reaction, he'd got his karma, then something began to change in the heart, and he had a little bit of humility, and then he could start to see Shiva in a different way. Otherwise, he was completely, you know, covered over by his big false ego. I know there's probably a lot more to be said. Yeah.
I'd like to comment on this question from my viewpoint. Experience. My realization is that we all have our limitations, just as your parents had this limitation. I couldn't really relate to this philosophy. I find it myself. I have understanding of philosophy, basic understanding, but there are many, many elements which are very obvious to me. I can understand them very easily. I also had the great fortune to experience something directly of these elements. For example, Krishna is in his deity, he is in his holy name. But do I really go for it? Does it remain like okay? Or am I really, practically there is some indifference to it, which is just as bad or maybe even worse than these people who just, okay, they reach their limit.
Yeah, it's very humiliating actually. Like on Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja, Bhakti Charu Swami, he wrote a nice offering, and he said to Srila Prabhupada that, you know, by the mercy of your divine grace, we heard all the philosophy when we were young devotees, and we thought that we'd become devotees and that we were understanding everything. But he said, just recently, I just realized that I think that I'm the doer of my activities, and I'm the enjoyer of opulences that are created in ISKCON and that are actually your property, and they're meant for Krishna's enjoyment. All of a sudden, I just realized that I'm practically on square one. And so, I mean, that's actually an advanced realization, to realize that you're so bewildered. But Krishna, the process of purification never ends.
I was thinking, probably like more advanced devotees look at us and say, why don't they get it? messing around in Krishna consciousness. They should
Yeah. But you can't really tell with Manohara Prabhu because the more advanced devotees get, the more they feel like they're completely in ignorance. So, and they genuinely feel like that, so it's hard to completely tell whether they're, you know.
Well, I think of myself, I'm an idiot. So I think if someone's above me who's looking down and going, can't you know, they
Yeah. That's their compassion and their mercy, that they see everyone like this, and then instead of being disgusted, they know they actually really think of how to try to engage them and elevate them. Yeah. Dina Dale.
Can you just have an integration? And you can turn around and look. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that you cannot see anyone in the less spiritual events except our disciples. So he's going to look at you from. It means that he's not from the events.
I just finished. There's just a quick story I read yesterday on the internet. It's from this. It's one conference anyway. Stories in it. And it, Srila Prabhupada, he had a servant one time, Bali Mardan, who was later became a big preacher in the South Pacific and Japan, different places. And when Bali Mardan was sleeping one night, I think it was like 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock in the morning, the bell went. And the servant, you know, he immediately jumped up and he went into Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada was super charged up and super animated. And he had been working on his Bhagavatam translations. And Bali Mardan hadn't seen him like this. You know, Srila Prabhupada was saying, this purport, look at this purport, you know. And it was about Prahlad Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj's concern for the fallen conditioned souls and his prayers that actually he wouldn't go back to Godhead, that he could stay to deliver, you know, people who were in ignorance. He wants to go back with everybody. And tears were coming to Prabhupada's eyes and he goes, look at Prahlad Maharaj, what a devotee. This is a Vaishnava and a paradukaduki, you know. Just because one person is in ignorance and he's been suffering under the modes, then he himself, he can't be happy, you know. And Prabhupada was just again and again praising Prahlad Maharaj. And Bali Maran's realization was that Prabhupada's entire focus and his meditation was the same actually as Prahlad Maharaj, just how to travel everywhere and just do everything possible to deliver conditioned souls, you know, for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's his mission. And then eventually Prabhupada, he became a little pacified by speaking and he began to tell some jokes and some stories and then he said, okay, you can go back to bed now. but Prabhupada had become just so, you know, enlivened by it that he couldn't tolerate the thought that someone was sleeping next door. He had to wake him up and share his realization with him, you know. I think it happened one time also with another devotee, another servant. And I can't remember who it was, but Prabhupada rang the bell in the middle of the night and the devotee got up and says, yes, Srila Prabhupada, something's happening, you're sick. And he goes, why are you sleeping? And he goes, oh, I'm tired, Srila Prabhupada, I do a lot of service. And he goes, yes, but why are you sleeping, you know? And your sleeping's in the mode of ignorance, you know, you should be chanting Hare Krishna. Yes, Srila Prabhupada. And so the devotee just sat there and began to chant. And then Prabhupada said, it's all right, go back to bed. You know, but every now and again it became intolerable that other devotees weren't relishing their birthright. You know, their birthright is to enjoy. And out of ignorance, they don't do it. Hare Krishna, Kashila Prabhupada, Ki Jai.